Welcome to The Urban Complex, a system of interrelated, emotion-charged ideas, feelings, memories, and impulses. This name takes the definition and lays out what a listener should expect. A podcast where ideas, feelings, and memories collide, leading towards meaningful change. I'm co-host Chris Richardson. Please enjoy the journey with The Urban Complex. Smarter cities for a stronger tomorrow.
All opinions by Chris Richardson, Dominic Papa, and podcast guests are solely their own opinions and do not reflect the opinions of Arizona State University or the Arizona Commerce Authority. Any endorsement of or messages from sponsors are solely supporting the production of this podcast. There is no relationship further than podcast purposes with any sponsor unless separately created with another entity.
All right, here we are again, Dom, another episode. How are you doing and what's new?
Yeah, no, doing well, you know, excited to continue on this path of The Urban Complex. I think it's been a fun journey so far, and I'm excited for the guest today. But before we get into this, our guest for this segment, I wanted to, you know, we've been talking about this idea for a new piece of our podcast called Cracks in the Pavement. And this is where I think we want to bring in not only interesting smart city stories that either, you know, you, Chris, or me have run into, you know, in our day-to-day jobs that find us, that strike us, we think are interesting, we think are funny, we think might be really confusing, or, you know, we want our audience, our attendees to really provide us with subjects that they find interesting. So that way we can talk about and have a dialogue with and actually, you know, kind of work our way through this. You know, it's that we want the segment to kind of be like you're walking down, you know, downtown Phoenix or wherever you might be, and you trip on a crack in the pavement and you fall.
Or at least point it out, right?
Right. Yeah, exactly. Right. We've all seen it. We all wonder why the cities can't fix it. Right. But those are the stories that just kind of stay with you throughout the day. You'll be eating dinner and you'll think about that crack that you tripped and you look goofy in front of your, you know, business colleagues on. So we're going to try to bring that in somehow, some way into the, you know, the following podcast. So if you have any stories, interesting articles that you want us to talk about, please send it to us and we'll include it in our Cracks of the Pavement segment.
Yeah. And you heard in our intro session, you know, don't just like us on Facebook, LinkedIn, YouTube, Twitter, but comment and let us know what you're interested in. Let us know if guests you want to hear, but also give us the ideas, give us the things that you've seen that you're questioning about. And we'll do our job either to ask the guests or to Dom's point, we'll address them in the way we know how with Cracks and Pavement. We'll keep it interactive on multiple channels. So thanks for that. Yeah, so let's get ready for the guest. So I think I'm the one that has most known Charlie Isaacs, our guest today. He is, his title is VP and CTO, Chief Technology Officer of the Customer Connection at Salesforce. He's part of a group of influencers, great group of folks. He's definitely an expert in the IoT space. He can get on tangents. He's amazing. I've heard him called the mad scientist before. And funny story, not only does he know Dom from an exec briefing way back when, but I was at a Dreamforce and he walks in. First time I ever meet him, there's a group of Salesforce.org execs. There's our ASU execs. And he's pulling out this box of stuff. And he's just getting everything ready. And everyone's wondering when's this going to start and what's he going to do? And he pops up and he looks. Said, you think it's complicated me putting this together? Well, that's not. What's complicated is me getting through TSA with all this hardware that looks like explosives. And he just like has this look on his face and everyone starts busting out laughing. So that is our guest, Charlie Isaac. Can't wait for you to learn what's going on and apply it to what you're doing at Cities.
This sounds like it's going to be fun.
Definitely. All right, Charlie Isaacs, welcome. Please let Dominic and I give you a warm welcome to our podcast, The Urban Complex. Charlie.
Great to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
I still remember the .org team briefing we had. I think it's Salesforce Dreamforce when I first met you. Have you been let off the do not fly list? If I remember correctly, you were stopped by TSA with this crazy array of Internet of Things you're trying to get through the airport. Are you able to fly still?
Yeah, do you wanna, actually the bag of tricks has expanded.
Oh, I'm sure.
As you know, nobody's flying now. Have you been flying really during the quarantine? I'm not flying. I've been a good.
But if you could fly, you could. I mean, if you were flying, you could. Okay, good.
All right. Yeah, I got a whole box full of stuff here. Like carry with me. Let's see. Oh man, this is gonna be. What do we have here? Oh, okay, here. What do you want
to
see?
When I met Charlie, he was trying to get through TSA with this list of gadgets. It was hilarious.
Okay, so here's a. These are little bits I take. I use for training for Black Girls Code. And this is a LED reel right here. This lights up and you can hang it on your wall. Actually, I used this for one of my IoT projects in the Salesforce Tower this year. You could cut off a bunch of these off the strip and then hook them up to a controller.
So have you figured out how to get this in your carry-on without attracting too much attention? That's what I'm curious about.
No, you just have to confess. You just take everything out of your bag, put it in the tray, and you say, look, here, I've got all the stuff. And
gotcha.
When you take it out and put it on the tray, they don't scrutinize you, right? They just let you go right by.
Perfect.
But if you hide in your bag, they'll just take it out of there, right?
Super important. So words to everyone for traveling, just be upfront. Well, so let's just start off with your background. How did you get to being a CTO of Customer Connection at Salesforce? Tell us a little bit about your history. Take some time. Let us know some of the big important things in your career.
Yeah. So I really started off, believe it or not, doing embedded technology, which we call IoT nowadays. When I first my first job offer was from a company. They actually focused on government systems. And my job was to fly around it. You know, as you know, I like flying. I like traveling. And they offered me a job where I would go install computer equipment in these government facilities all around the world. And I was never able to, I always wanted to be a, like, in the military to give back, right? I felt like I'd taken so much growing up and I was now educated and I wanted to give back to my country. And I have so many allergies, they wouldn't let me go into the military. So what do they call that? The 4-H or 4F or whatever they call it. I don't know. They would never let me in the military, even if I wanted to go. I probably passed the mental exam too. Or anyway, I'm getting way off subject here. Could you put that on the cutting room floor for me? No. I joined this company. They said, hey, we want you to go install this computer equipment in the Pentagon and in Cheyenne Mountain and the basement of the White House. Right. And I said, wait, you're going to pay me to fly around and do this? And they said, yes. And the majority of the equipment centered around what we call a communication controller. It did end-to-end encryption of data, even before we had these fancy encryption capabilities now, right? So we were doing, it was a communication controller, but it was mostly in firmware. So we'd write the code and download it to the controller box. And that was basically a very expensive, huge IoT device, right? And that's what it was. It converted the communications from point A to point B, encrypted them, and then transmitted them along with different protocols. So that's how I got my start. And then I progressed through that. There's a woman named Louise Kirkbride, who was actually the first woman technology engineer, which is really, I'm mentioning her name because she paved a way for me helping other women in tech, to get bootstrapped, because she was one of my first amazing women leaders that I work for. But she lured me into the Silicon Valley, and I took a completely different, I spent 15 years at that company that did combined, they combined government systems work and also commercial work, because we repurposed all the work we were doing. We were doing imagery exploitation, which was, we were basically in the beginning dropping film out of airplanes and taking data from spy satellites and watching Russian troop movements, right?
Oh,
and that was all classified at the time, right? I think I'm hoping it's been declassified.
I hope so too. We're breaking it here on the Urban Complex.
That's right. Otherwise, I'm going to be in trouble. We repurposed all that cool technology for weather. We did, we sold it to Hong Kong Airport, and they did all the things you see on the news now where they're manipulating weather. We played an early part in all that satellite data being manipulated and leveraged for weather forecasting. So anyway, I'm getting way off subject. So I went to the Silicon Valley and I focused on customer service. So I, with Louise Kirkbride, we built this company eventually called Broad Daylight that was the first service cloud in the cloud, right? It was basically what we have for service cloud at Salesforce. We built that in the cloud, and we were eventually bought by, you know, two or three acquisitions later. Oracle picked up our technology and then locked it in a closet, basically, because we were bought by ATG, the old Dynamo company. And I'm supposed to be answering the question, how did I become a CTO? Okay, so I was CTO of that startup, right? So, and after that, I was CTO for a company called Kana, and then I went to Genesys, and I did innovation at a company called Genesys. And then one day, I ran into Alex Dion and at Salesforce, and it was history after that, because I went through a whole process, a very lengthy process. I don't know if you've ever been involved with talking to people at Salesforce. If you ever try to interview at Salesforce, it's quite a lengthy process to get in. But once you're in, right? And so Dave Kellogg, who I'm forever indebted to, hired me at Salesforce as CTO because I said, hey, I'm not into titles, but it'd be great if you can keep my CTO title. I've always been a CTO. And he was able to do that. So I'm still grandfathered with the CTO title at Salesforce. And I'm, again, indebted to Alex Dion and Dave Kellogg, who's they're both amazing people.
Alex, well, it's an amazing story. I mean, you can hear that you've done a lot with municipalities. You've actually went and integrated IoT devices there. You also know the customer, and part of our urban complex is all about putting the citizen at the center of some of these decisions. So, you know, one thing we'll try to do is stay away from some of the deeper technical parts and try to make it real for a very broad audience base. But you also, in that customer base, you might not know, I was the original vertical markets manager for some of your Primus and Kana competitor. I built the higher education vertical for Talisma, if you don't know. I literally visited the first three higher ed customers they had and came back with a wish list that turned into the Talisma higher ed product. Like that was my job way back.
That's amazing.
So it's kind of funny when I saw that in your background, I had to call that out. It's really great to have you here. I'm going to turn it over to Dom to kind of dig in a different direction with some of what you've done.
Yeah, Charlie, sure. So, you know, as you know, I come from the more city background, work in local government, now work in state government, phenomenal background that you have, you know, and so a part of the urban complex is really trying to peel back the curtain and talk about smart cities in a way that makes sense to not only city managers, but the citizens alike. So, you know, one of the running jokes in the smart city circuit is, you know, you ask 10 mayors what a smart city means to them, and you're going to get 12 answers because they don't know, and they're going to change their answers after listening to each one of them talk. And so, you know, I would love kind of your perspective. You know, what does a smart city mean to you? And really, how is kind of Salesforce contributing to that movement? Because, you know, when you do talk to a lot of the city managers and mayors, Salesforce isn't kind of top of mind when it comes to smart cities, but I do know that you're doing a ton. And so we would love to hear kind of, one, your perspective on the smart city movement, and two, how is Salesforce really contributing to drive that forward?
Okay, great. Well, let me start off with some basics, because I know we're not supposed to go too technical, but I want to describe where we play and how we play in the smart city world and also in the IoT general world. So if you look at how IoT is built, I call the left-hand side of the architecture diagram, I call that the first mile. Other people call it the last mile, but I call it the first mile. It's where the sensors are, right? And where the people are, right? These are where the people are. They're out there. And there's a traffic light, or there is a lamp post that has a smart LED in it of some sort. And you know, since there's a sensor in there, you know when that light is on and you know when it's off, right? And if it's off, you want to take action, right? So that's the left-hand side. And that communicates to typically in an intermediate cloud. And sometimes that cloud is AWS or Google GCP, or in the case of Salesforce, we've worked a lot with a company called Cisco. They have this thing called Cisco Kinetic for connected cities, right? And I think you both know about Cisco, right? And what they're, when they're playing in that space. So they've built out several partners that communicate from their sensors into like Cisco CKC. And then what Salesforce does is, we don't want every piece of data. We don't want every byte of information from that. We don't want, we only want what we call anomalies, right? So if that light goes out, that's an anomaly. We don't care the light's on every millisecond, right? Don't send me a message into Salesforce every millisecond telling me that light is still on. I don't care. But if it goes out, guess what? That might be important. Or if it goes out and then there are two other lights out on that street, maybe I write a rule in Salesforce that says, hey, or maybe I write that in the CKC cloud, right? Maybe Cisco writes that rule. But someone writes a rule and there's an anomaly. There's an anomaly triggered in Salesforce that dispatches the field technician. We have this thing called Field Service Lightning running on Salesforce, or maybe they're just running Service Cloud. And that is able to communicate from CKC into our, through our API. And we have, on Salesforce, we have open APIs for everything. An API is something that allows you to communicate from one computer system to another. And it's really cool because you can pretty much invoke any piece of functionality in Salesforce. I call it all the important functionality, just by leveraging that API. So if I want to say, hey, I'm going to dispatch or I'm going to inform the maintenance department that more than one light is out on this street, so we should go schedule a visit using Salesforce Field Service Lightning Scheduler to go make that person change that, those light bulbs on that street. Let's do a maintenance activity on that street. Let's schedule it. Let's see when they've done it. Let's see when it's completed. Let's close the ticket automatically or manually, whatever. But guess what? We don't even, you're asking what we're doing out for smart cities at this moment. We're not doing a lot of those use cases because the problem is a lot of cities don't have smart light bulbs, right? Mm-hmm. So we don't have a lot of use cases like that. But we have the predecessor to what you could do with a smart city implementation, such as connected lamppost, right? What we have is this thing called connected 311, or you know, whatever the city wants to call it, right? Whatever the municipality wants to call it. It's an iPhone app where I'm a citizen and I notice there's a light out on my street. And that's a bad safety hazard, right? If more than one light is out on my street, that could be a lawsuit. That could be an accident. So I should be able to report that, take a picture of the light post, right, with the number that has a number on it, or use my GPS to know, right? There's GPS built into my phone, so why not leverage that? And then I go into my Salesforce app, my connected citizen app, and I say, yes, light out. And then that'll do something similar to the light bulb reporting up in the Salesforce. So instead of having it automatically connect up through that smart LED, it will, you know, the citizen takes an active involvement in helping solve that same problem. And the same workflow is triggered. But guess what you could do if you've got a whole bunch of citizens out there reporting these issues, right? You could, the next logical step is when the city finally gets the funding to replace their light fixtures, they've already got the infrastructure in place to allow for the enablement. All those workflows are re-leveraged, right?
So. I mean, that's an amazing story. You know, I dealt with that personally when I worked for one of the cities. You know, we were very reactive when it came to things like this. We had to wait for a citizen to call us to tell us something was out before we then, you know, sent someone to go fix the streetlight. But so what, when you're talking to city managers or even CIOs, I mean, what is your justification? Obviously, you know, if you can automate that sort of process, you're delivering a higher quality service, but are you seeing cities save money, save time, save resources? I mean, what's that justification to go to council and say, hey, we should fund this infrastructure because it's not only going to deliver a higher quality service, but it's going to do X. What are you seeing the kind of the major drivers for those infrastructure upgrades.
Yeah. So I think that's where it gets really difficult. Okay. And that's generally speaking about IoT, that's where it's been difficult over the last up until the whole pandemic hit. It was extremely difficult. Now it's less difficult because so many people now, I'll tell you what, this has made my job, the pandemic. Sure, I'm not traveling, so I don't get to hug people as often. And I don't get to visit cool people like you two, right? Especially, I haven't hugged you yet. Sorry, I've hugged Chris. but I think that...
You just got the virtual hug.
Virtual hug. Sure, I missed that part of my job, but I am completely swamped with companies that now want to do remote patient monitoring, right? Because you don't want to go visit someone's house unless you have to, right? Telemedicine is blowing up, right? It's getting really popular. My friend Ray Wong, I don't know if you know Ray, he's one of the Constellation, he is the CEO of Constellation Research Group. His wife is a doctor, and she is certified now in 13 states for telemedicine. And she is completely swamped. So, I picked up that big box. There's some stuff in that box that I can show you. I've got a patch device from LifeSignals that allows you to remotely monitor a patient's vital signs. It does ECG. It does SpO2 oxygen level. It does all the information that's important for COVID for critical care patients. And the company sent to me, hey, can you hook this up to Salesforce? What does this look like hooked up to Salesforce, right? So all those use cases now are becoming critical. I'm supposed to be talking about connected cities. So back to the connected cities, and you specifically asked about what I call ROI, right? Return on investment. So how do you justify replacing all those light bulbs, right? And all those lampposts in your city? Well, that's where it becomes very difficult. But with the pandemic now, people are gonna wanna to monitor more things. So the city that had to go out and do the ROI study and secure the funding, you know, every city has to go out and get funding for that sort of thing. And it's expensive, right? To replace every light bulb in the city, how much does that cost? I don't know, millions of dollars, right? It's expensive, depending on how many light fixtures you have. So they have to do an ROI study. And part of the items that go into that ROI study are intangible. Like some of the things can be measured, but you have to guess, like how many lawsuits are we gonna have because we had this number of accidents because we had poor lighting in this area, right? So that's like a I hate to measure negative. I'd rather measure positives. Another negative I don't like to measure, and I do a lot of connected parking use cases in cities. Like we've got one customer called Unified Parking that they get revenue from parking meters, right? So they get a share of the revenue. And depending on their deal they have, and I'm not really allowed to talk about which deal they have with which city and things like that, but that's how they're, in some cases, investors are going in and saying, hey, look, we'll replace all your parking meters, connect them to the cloud, and in return for, we'll manage all that. You don't have to worry about parking attendance anymore. You can reduce the amount that's gonna cost you to do that. And we'll just give you, we'll write you a check every month, right? So more and more companies are doing that using connected city infrastructure. So that one's like a little bit easier, right? To justify the ROI around. But yeah, then so there's all, go ahead.
I was just having coffee with an investor today that's literally working on doing the investment of the solar panels for a city. The costs are changing. It's like, as you're seeing the market change, like, what do you want our audience to know? How do they get started? How do they take some action? And whether it's with Salesforce or not, I think you really can see that it's time. What do you suggest?
Yeah. So it depends on what they really want to do. Do they want to, how do they want to participate? Do they want to invest in the market? Do they want to write code? Do they want to implement? I mean, there are several different aspects of that. They could, you know, what I would say, especially people that are in college, right? And I, by the way, I've been saying this now for 5 years, so I'm obviously, maybe I'm just a little bit ahead of my my time. I don't know, but I keep saying that IoT is going to be huge, right? But now it is kind of huger because of the pandemic, right? Because I'm getting a lot more intent. I'm doing a lot more briefings with customers and things like that. But so there are different components and different aspects of IoT. So you can, if they're interested in hardware, they can build sensors, right? Sensors are, I don't know, everything from, here's an SpO2 monitor, right? I mean, there's like a little circuit board in here this big. And well, guess what? This is a this happens to be a dumb device I picked up. It's not even connected to Wi-Fi. I could pick this up. This is a $29 device, and I can connect it to Wi-Fi for maybe an extra $5 a unit. One of the people listening could embark on an adventure to do that, to Wi-Fi enable dumb devices. Mm. And I know a company that's doing this. They're building Wi-Fi controllers for factory units, right? That are legacy factory devices. They're hooking a controller onto that factory device, getting it connected into the cloud. So you could do proactive service. You could do predictive service. You could do predictive maintenance. You could do predictive analytics around that, right? So there's everything from that to going to Salesforce and learning. And I think you've both heard of Lightning Flow, right? There's a product, a tool on Salesforce. We call it Salesforce Automation. And it's my favorite tool. Don't tell anybody I said that. It's like saying you have a favorite grandson. I'm not allowed to do that. But it's my favorite IoT tool because Lightning Flow is my IoT hammer and everything looks like a nail. I could take an API call, especially with the latest version of Flow. I don't even have to know how to write code. So anybody listening, if they could build a flow, a screen flow in Salesforce where they say, okay, on screen one, I want to ask for their name. And then I want to store that in a record in Salesforce and on the next step. If they could do that, they could process IoT events, right? Mm-hmm. So the next thing I would tell people listening, if they wanted to participate in IoT, they could think of use cases they could build within a Lightning Flow. And a Lightning Flow is really easy to build. So I can say, okay, what am I going to get from through the API into my flow? I'm going to look for a light being off. Okay, let's just build that use case in flow. How hard would that be? All I need to do is get a connection from the a controller of some sort. It could be either directly from the cloud, from the first mile, which I don't recommend, right? Because you don't want every notification coming from a hardware device. Typically it would come from AWS, for example, right? So let's say it comes from AWS. AWS has a thing called AWS IoT. And I could do, or it could be a Lambda function in AWS, which is a kind of a thing that goes out and talks to, it's like Flow, but it talks to an API. So I could say, hey, Lambda function. And anybody who's listening, I can send you the code. There's like 20 lines of code where you can get from that Lambda function in AWS from a light bulb. And I usually have all this stuff on my desk and I wasn't organized here. And there's a switch called a AWS button you can push and do the same function of a light switch being out. And then you could push that event into a flow. And what would you do with that? You could say, okay, if that goes from on to off, then trigger this flow. And then what do I want to do in the flow? I want to create a case in Service Cloud. Okay. You could do that in 5 minutes if you know anything about flow. And so everything from they could build hardware and put a Wi-Fi controller in this if they're interested in hardware to writing no code at all and managing Salesforce IoT anomalies in the flow.
And I still remember that demo you did a few years back, Charlie. I know it was a little at the time kind of cost prohibitive, but you could change your model for Salesforce customers. And what I remember that I think speaks to those that might not be the technologists out there, once your technology team figures out how to do the connected device, trigger the event, what blew me away, and you had this years ago, is that the scale and repeatability of the logic was as simple as writing a simple command that a non-technical person can do. Meaning, if this signal happens, then any one of your million devices that was connected the same way reacts the same way. Meaning, it's all automated. It's all consistent. You can tell where the breakdown is, how the flow is going. I think that's important for the non-technical guest base to realize that the technology is there to connect, is the IoT piece, but then it's the logic and what you do with it and how you get insights and how you automate flow that gets you the return.
Exactly. That's a great point. And let me shout out to, there's a guy named Gary Brandelier, who's one of our product managers on the field service product. And he is totally bought off on the importance of IoT. And he's been taking, for example, the asset object in Salesforce, which helps you manage assets, and thinking about how to make that better and better to accommodate IoT use case within Field Service Lightning. So we have a bunch of smart people that are adding a lot more functionality to Salesforce to accommodate IoT use cases. And this whole, and this is a forward-looking statement, but you probably heard at Dreamforce, if you had a Dreamforce to you this year, or if you joined Mark's session or any of the other sessions talking about what's coming next, you probably heard about automation, right? A lot about automation. And guess what? That's mainly based on what we're adding to flow and associated functionality.
It's, I mean, but this is, so this is what is kind of amazing me at where we're at in the smart city, I guess, journey. It is almost what you guys are talking about. It's this like democratization of smart cities, right? Where before you had to be super technical to understand how these technologies were completely altering the urban environment, right? And that's where a lot of cities got strung up, because you had a lot of, you know, technology companies coming in and trying to tell a city manager or a mayor how these technologies were working. And it was almost speaking a different language. But now with the advent of IoT, as you're mentioning, you know, we're seeing so many challenges, so many competitions where, you know, any college student, could be political science, could be an engineer, could be a sustainability student, are developing these IoT solutions that are really changing the way we're interacting with our cities. And I think that's what's fascinating about IoT. It's really bringing it back to everyone, not only the technologists, but everyone else as well. And I think that's what's exciting me, is I think the pace of adoption and the pace of change that we're going to see happen here in the next couple of years is going to really take off, because you're right, anyone can do it, right? I was even able to follow that logic that you were building through that use case. And it just amazes me of where we might be able to go in the next couple of years.
That's great. Those are all great points.
Yeah. So this is exciting. So, if you were a mayor, a city manager, let's flip it on its head. If you were a citizen, right, and you had an idea to kind of build a workflow or to kind of mess around in your urban environment, what would be your suggestion? Would you go to try to partner with the university? Are there clubs? You know, I think you mentioned that you kind of work for a couple of different organizations. I think Girls at Code, or I wasn't quite sure. No, how would you get involved in changing your urban environment?
Yeah, so I have an unfair advantage because I know how to do all this stuff already. I would participate, and I think you're going to see more and more of these virtual hackathons coming out. I don't know if you've seen any of these. I get involved with a couple of them right out of the chute on at the pandemic, like back in March and April, early April. We built an example would be we built a ventilator. One of my colleagues built a mechanical device that was actually a usable ventilator, and we connected it up to Salesforce for ventilator monitoring and also patient monitoring within Salesforce, so we could monitor the problem is that. Remember at the time, way back at the beginning of the pandemic, nobody can get a ventilator, right? And they were trying to figure out how to mass produce ventilators. So we took two approaches. There was one company that was able to put their whole illustrated parts breakdown and put it into, there's this technology that's in our AppExchange called Propel, don't know if you've heard of them. They do basically, it's an ERP system that's built onto our AppExchange. And by the way, that's another thing you're going to see more of in the near future. This is another forward-looking statement. You're going to see more IoT capabilities and more partners integrate, because that's what I've been focusing on actually a lot during the pandemic, is helping these folks get their functionality, not just connected city stuff, but general speaking, these huge platforms connected on our AppExchange so that our customers can easily connect their devices, whatever device they have, into Salesforce through one of these intermediate clouds. But back to your question about getting back to hackathons. So I would sign up for hackathons, and you don't have to know anything. They'll fix you up on a team. And the company, the foundation that I typically work for, or the organization I work with, is Black Rolls Code. Not as much during the pandemic, because there are very smart people that have taken over that are running these virtual sessions, and they don't need me. Where they really needed me, they needed me to show up and help. And that's what I really enjoyed doing the most, was teaching a class full of, 25 people in a class of 12 to 15 year old girls, right? Amazing. These people are amazing. And they totally get it. I mean, they blow me away how much they learn in a 4-hour period in a classroom. But anyway, so, and we build IoT. I did a couple IoT projects with them too. We did the little bit thing I was holding up. There was a Black Girls Code little bit. This is a slider. This is a dimmer, right? So you hook this up to a power source and you hook it up to a light and you can dim the light, right? They learn how all that works. And even the younger kids, we have 8-year-olds learning how to do that, right? How circuits work. And then we program it using an Arduino, for example, which is a basically a computer on a chip. Right. And you can program that from your Mac. And okay, I'm getting off subject. So back to as a citizen, focus on things like volunteering for, get into a virtual hackathon. The other thing you could do is, you ask questions about what would you do if you were a city? What would you do if you were a mayor? If I were a mayor, and let me shout out, I should shout out to Arizona, but you do that all the time. So I'm going to change states. Hopefully I won't get myself in trouble. There's a small town, which isn't so small anymore, called Cary, a town of Cary. And we've done two basic hackathons with them. And this is bringing in multi-vendors, right? And they say, okay, here's a challenge for you. And this is what I highly recommend for cities to do, so you don't end up boiling the ocean. You bring a group of people in that are willing to volunteer their time and their resources and their software. And you give them a challenge. You say, okay, and town of Cary had a problem with rising water, right? So they were worried that if a hurricane hit, that there would be citizens in harm's way near some of the rivers, right? And they were worried that the water would rise to a level where they'd be in danger. So they brought this company in called Greenstream. They volunteered their sensors. I think they bought them actually. So that was the only thing they bought. They bought Greenstream sensors. And Microsoft did, they provided Azure. We provided Salesforce, of course, and both Service Cloud, Field Service Lightning, and Marketing Cloud. We didn't have to provide much. They already had licenses, right? They just, okay, here, we'll just turn it on, add more capability. And within a week, basically it was Thursday and Friday, we had end-to-end functionality going from water sensors all the way through to Salesforce, triggering notifications through Salesforce Marketing Cloud to the citizens via email and SMS that, yes, the water level is rising here. You need to, here's a warning. And if it got to evacuation level, it would evacuate them. But what was the last hurricane that hit North Carolina? Oh gosh, it was just a few months ago. Anyway, they were able to test it. I'm so bad with with names.
but they were able to test it. Wow.
Yeah, they tested it in real. Okay, so we deployed it in that day, right? And we did a preliminary test. I've actually got a video. If anybody's interested, I've got a video with these 20 partners in a room. Basically, we had 20 people in a room, and you can see the whiteboards where we scratched all over the whiteboards all the 2 days of work that we put together to get things running. And I recorded the Salesforce portion of the deployment in the video. And I'm willing to send, that's not confidential information. And I can send that to anybody who wants to see it. But they tested it in a real situation 3 months later. And I get this email from Nicole Raimondo, who's the CTO or CIO? CIO of Town of Cary. And she says, oh my gosh, it worked. It's great. They got their email notifications that they should probably evacuate if the water rises anymore. And I think they actually had to evacuate one of the areas.
Such a great story. We'll have to shout out to the Town of Cary when we announce this, and feel free to follow up and send us that link. We'll include it. One thing I heard you say earlier that I think is really important, because I kind of sense where this is going, is that you said you're helping to connect the ecosystem to your exchange, which means all of that, then the technical power of those other entities. My guess, there are a lot of utility companies, infrastructure providers. And if you can do that, the cities probably work with those folks already, and you can do the hard work behind the scenes and then turn it into language that resonates more with, say, the non-technical teams. The technical teams can vouch it, make sure that it's going to work with the network or with the other investments. And that's really important. That's a lot of the themes you hear from Dom and I on the Urban Bond Complex, is how do you create the ecosystem of collaboration? And it sounds like you're doing that with the tech platform, which is great to hear. Anything more to add if I'm hearing that correctly?
No, and that's great. So what's really been difficult lately is that, typically when you get something on the App Exchange, you have to go through a gauntlet. And I hopefully the Salesforce people working on the App Exchange team won't be mad at me for saying that. Well, hopefully they won't watch that. No, because it is a gauntlet. You have to go through a security review, right? You have to go through code review. You have to go through all these checkboxes to get your product on the App Exchange. But guess what you have to do in order to put a medical device up there, right? You've got the extra complication of not only going through Health Cloud, which has to be HIPAA compliant, but you also have to get FDA approval. I wish I could show you that thing. Oh, where is that? Here, hold on. Here's the other box. This is the cool box. Here, I want to show you this box right here. This is okay. This is a blood pressure device. This is a Medisante.
Hope that was an expensive device. Let's hope it still works.
Oh no! I just dropped. This is an automated contact tracer. I could throw that. That's meant to be carried by some. This is. I've dropped this before too. But if I turn it on, here's a blood pressure cuff. I could put this on. I could take my blood pressure. But this is connected up through the Medisante cloud. And these guys are trying to get up on the App Exchange, right? We have a preliminary integration with them already. But where's my, I wish I had my patch. Oh, well, I don't have my patch in here, but I've got a Life Signals patch. I probably look like the mad scientist here. There's a little patch you put on.
I'm sure it wouldn't be the first time you've been called that, Charlie.
Yeah. I don't know what happened. I think, my grandkids were in my office and everything's moved. Yeah, I think my granddaughter was trying to put the patch on the other day, but just it's like.
But that's the thing. I mean, all yeah. this stuff is new, and so whether it's trying to get through the App Exchange or whether the city is trying to digest it, I think that's the point about this podcast: is how do we make these stories real so people take the risk to try something different and learn what's working? And I think what we're hearing is the time is now. IoT has been around for a while; it's starting to come to the forefront. Internet of Things is real. You can connect anything. You can create workflows. And you can try things and you can scale them. So
yeah, Chris, before we move on, I just want to kind of double click on that, because what we're trying to say is that when you collaborate, it makes things a lot easier. So Charlie, if I can just ask you to put yourself in the CIO's shoes, how difficult was it for them to run that challenge, right? Because a lot of times when we talk to them, they're like, oh, you want to run a challenge? That's going to be so hard. It's going to take so many weeks. It's going to take months. It's going to take so much resources. Did it really demand that much from the city's perspective to actually bring other partners in the room, to bring their resources in and to actually execute on that challenge? How difficult was it for the city to do that? Because we'll hopefully have a lot of city leaders listening to this. And I want them to know it's not that hard if you know how to collaborate and work together.
Right. So Nicole, of course, is a great leader. She has great people working for her. And it was invigorating for them to see everybody getting together to work together as a team. I mean, we're in the room with Microsoft, right? And in some cases, sometimes we partner with Microsoft and sometimes we compete against Microsoft, but it was like world peace, right? We were helping each other deploy this. And I'm sure that was invigorating for their team to be able to see these partners. And guess what? Del Boomi was in the room too. Del Boomi built the integration layer, and we could have just as easily used Salesforce MuleSoft, right? But they already had bought licenses to Del Boomi, so that's what we used, right? So we basically had three different weird situations going on, but we all came together for a common good, and it was a common good, right? We could actually save lives with this implementation. So to answer your question about the city, sure, they had to allocate. We probably had 5 or 6 city employees from different functional areas because we needed the wastewater people there. We needed the stormwater people in the room. We needed the IT people in the room. We needed the people who managed the Salesforce Marketing Cloud instance, right? So we had the Marketing Cloud and the Service Cloud. And then we also had the Del Boomi, 2 people from the Del Boomi Town of Cary team. So when you count them all up, we probably had 8 people for a day and a half. And guess what? They made it really fun and engaging. And I highly recommend anybody who's interested in doing this, call Nicole. And
well, no, hey, you should make an introduction to Nicole. We'll have her as a guest. Yeah. We'll fact check you. We'll fact check it.
She'd be great. She might tell you, oh my gosh, it was a complete nightmare. You wouldn't believe what we
No, I don't think so. I think what Dom cued in yeah. is that with a little bit of planning, and with the right partners, you can change outcomes. I think that's a great story. Thank you for that. Yeah. On a little different note, but still on the theme of working with partners, you know, Salesforce has a unique program, their 111 program. And I think sometimes municipalities may not have the luxury of being in a big city and working with a company. Like, talk about the mantra of how you might want to approach working with someone and why your 111 program is so valuable. And how maybe some of your education work, I believe you need an educated city to be a smart city. And like some of the focus there, if you can kind of tease that out, let the listeners know, it might give them some ideas of how they might work with companies in their area.
Yeah, when Mark and Parker founded the company, they knew that they wanted to, their mantra in the beginning was, business is the greatest platform for change, right? So they wanted to build the company on the foundation of giving back. And they came up with the idea of a 111 program, 1% of the profit, 1% of employee hours, and 1% of the product was basically given back to nonprofit organizations, NGOs, right? So, and you wouldn't believe the number of companies that I don't even know what the latest figures are, but we've given, $480 million in grants through that program. It's a joke to me to say I'm going to volunteer 56 hours, which is when you figure out 1% of the hours in a year, it's 56 hours or whatever it is. Because a lot of us give back a lot more than 56 hours, but that's what they paid us. That's what they pay us for, right? To volunteer. So, it's helping companies deploy Salesforce. It's volunteering for organizations like Black Girls Code, Girls Who Code. So, it's really easy to use to leverage that those hours to help other companies. So, and Mark, of course, encourages any company, any entity to have that philosophy, that 1-1-1 model, because it does so much good in the world. So wait, now what was your question again? The question was how.
I think yeah. You said it. You talked yeah. about what it was and yeah. some of the areas that it benefited. So Charlie, we're getting near the time. I don't want to keep you past. We said we'll have to have you back. Find out how some of these IoT advances and Salesforce Parkline are working in the smart city space. We do have two quick questions that we ask our guests, and you referenced one earlier, but. Is there anyone out there you want to call out as a special appreciation that really helped you in the career line? I know you said you worked with one of the first ever female engineers. You've learned a lot, but is there anything else that you want to call out in specific that's helped you in the journey?
Oh, wow. Okay. First, my wife. Oh my gosh. Tomorrow's our 28th wedding anniversary. And she's the most.
Congratulations on that.
Thank you. She's the most tolerant person on the face of the earth. And I'm sincere. I think I posted on my LinkedIn profile that I wouldn't be anywhere without my wife putting up with my shenanigans. I mean, it's just amazing. And I've got the best family. My brother and my sisters are amazing. My in-laws, they're all very supportive and they're amazing. But I mentioned Dave Kellogg, who got me into Salesforce. I mentioned, like, if you look at the group that I'm in, I work for a guy named Peter Coffey, who somebody, a lot of people listening have probably heard Peter Coffey speak.
Yeah, Peter's amazing. I've met him a couple times.
He's a rocket scientist, right? I mean, seriously, his kids are rocket scientists too. I think they both work for SpaceX. Anyway, I'm going to get myself into trouble. But John Toshek, we're in John Toshek's group. And I lovingly call that group the land of misfit toys because okay, I'm really I'm fortunate because he's not going to be watching this or listening to this.
Oh, you don't know.
Hopefully he won't. But he, we're a group of people that every person, maybe except me, in the group, is such an exceptionally talented person, but so good inside and out, which is. A lot of the people at Salesforce are that way anyway. And that's why I think, you know, we hire people if they're not bought off on the 1-1-1 program, if they don't want to give 56 hours a year of their time to help somebody else, they're probably not in the right place. And we know that immediately. They say, what do you mean you want me to volunteer? Well, it's not mandatory. Well, you know, then whatever. We usually attract really good people because of that 1-1-1 program too. It goes both ways.
As you're hearing kind of what, thanks for that, as you're hearing what the urban complex is all about, is there anyone out there you think needs to be a guest? You mentioned the town of Cary, you threw up Peter Coffey. I don't know, is there anyone that we should be thinking about of getting as a guest that would be an amazing representative of this movement?
Yeah, I mean, you need to meet Vala Afshar. He's amazing. He's in our group too.
I met Vala, he's great. Yeah, cool.
Yeah, Brian Salas, Tiffany Bova. Karen Monja.
Tiffany's an ASU grad. I met her. She had me on a panel a while back. Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
Okay. So as we wrap up, I do have one favor. We've heard that you were on Dancing with the Stars. Do you mind when we announce this, if we put that Twitter link out there for you cutting the rug?
You call that Dancing with the Stars? I call that like failing fast downward or something like that. I don't know.
Hey, it's on social media, so it's fair game. With that, Charlie.
make sure they don't eat before watching me dance. How's that?
On that note, thanks for being a guest. The Urban Complex gives a big note of thanks today to today's guest, Charlie Isaac, VP and CTO Customer Connection at Salesforce. Thank you.
And Charlie. Thank you. Thank you so much, Chris. Really appreciate it. Thank you, Dominic.
Good to see you again.
See you, Charlie. Wow. That was a great interview. You know, I'm just really excited. There was so much, I think, gold in there, especially from a non-technologist point of view. You know, I know that he's a CTO and he kind of got deep into the technical weeds at points, but there was he was a mad scientist, but it was perfect. And I want to kind of harp back on something I mentioned in that interview was, you know, this idea of the democratization of IoT, because before Now, especially when smart cities first started, IoT and smart cities were for the technologists, right? You had to be an engineer to understand these systems. But now the prevalence of IoT is it's everywhere. And it's turning everyone, every citizen, into almost a change maker, right? I can remember a story when I think it was the city of Mesa partnered with, I think it's a local makerspace called Heatsink Labs. And, you know, it was just a elementary school student developed a sensor that was counting people that passed by the street to give local information to the local businesses about how many people were passing by their doorstop on a particular day and when was the best time to advertise, right? There's a local K through 12 student solving a challenge for a local business. I think this idea of, you know, IoT becoming democratized, everyone can participate. You don't have to have an engineering degree. It's just phenomenal. I think it's really going to accelerate smart cities in the future.
I just love how he brought in a real example of the town of Cary and how they used multi-tech. They didn't worry. They already had relationships. Everyone came to the table. It took six people, a day and a half, probably some planning going in. And, you know, again, I was joking with fact check, but like, I'm sure when it comes back, knowing these tools, it did do what it's done and it's being used later. And so, you know, I think that's why we're here. That's why the urban complex exists, because we want to bring these stories to the forefront. We want to get our listeners thinking differently and trying new things and sharing and experiencing and, to that point, democratizing. I think you said making the complex not complex.
Yeah.
It's super exciting. So.
Exactly. I think you hit the two nails on the head, right? Anyone could be into IoT and any city can be into solving challenge, right? It's transforming the complex into not complex. That's great. You know, and I can't help but bring this up too, you know, especially because we started the podcast with this idea of cracks in the pavement. And I know that Charlie mentioned, you know, Cisco as kind of the premier smart city company. And you know, we're coming out of, you know, our summit that we had in early January, and there was an article at the time, I think, I don't know, maybe a couple of weeks before, talking about how Cisco was pulling out of the smart city space. And it seemed to really, you know, reverberate in the smart city space that, oh, here was the giant, you know, the company that's most well known for, you know, being the smart city company and investing so much money into modernization of urban infrastructure. And here's an article saying that they're pulling out of the smart city space. And people were asking at the time, you know, is this the death of smart cities? You know, and it's just interesting. I think this is one of those cracks in the pavement movement or moments that, you know, we see so much momentum, could, you know, to this day. I mean, look how impassioned Charlie was about all that's going on. And yet you hear as an article that's seemingly saying that the industry is failing. And yet there's also, you know, Cisco employees, Cisco executives saying how misleading that article was and saying that it's not true. They might just be, you know, stepping away from one of their services, but they're not getting out of the urban modernization space.
It's interesting. If you follow Gartner, they call it the trough of disillusionment. There's this hype cycle of technologies. And at the top of the hype cycle, I mean, we all went to conferences when Cisco and some of the telecoms were investing hundreds of millions of dollars into the movement. And there was so much there. And to your point, it was very technical driven. It didn't resonate. But now I feel like we're in that trough of disillusionment where we see that these things are real. We see they're getting momentum. And that's the best time when you kind of sneak out and really hit some things with lower expectations. And hopefully Cisco stays the course. I'm sure they are. You know, connectivity is critical for these things. And so, and you just heard you know, Salesforce's view on what they're doing. Throughout the guests, we've had tons of tech that will make this a reality. So it's a really exciting time.
Yeah. So hopefully that gives our, you know, our audience a little bit of a view of what cracks in the pavement can mean. And in this, some of the stories we're looking for you to send us, because if you were as confused as we are, don't worry about it. It's a crack in the pavement.
Thanks for listening to The Urban Complex, smarter cities for a stronger tomorrow. Please find us on where you listen, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. We do love your feedback. Let us know if you have ideas for guests or questions to air on Cracks in the Pavement via social media. The Urban Complex is found on LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter. Or just shoot me an email, chris@theurbancomplex.com. Till next time.